Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the Marshmallow Man. His shoelaces
were
like all over underneath this log.
I imagine him in Crocs, so this metaphor isn't tracking for me.
The good, the bad, and the science. Movies, comedians, and scientists. The good, the bad, and the science.
Welcome to The Good, the Bad, and the Science, the show that breaks down the science of television and movies with a comedian and a scientist. Today, we're discussing Evolve. So I'll ask about space travel, giraffes, and graying out in a fighter jet. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and I've got two fascinating guests joining me today. My first guest is a New York-based comedian who hosts the Potterhood podcast and the Unapologetic podcast presented by Ball is Life. Welcome to the show, Will Posnan.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, Will. Happy to have you. Thanks for being here.
I'm excited to learn even more about how animals are going to take us through a wormhole or whatever, save humanity.
Yeah, that's actually weirdly accurate because you're right. Evolve, we're going from topic to topic. We're talking about space travel. We're talking about animals. If you guys haven't seen Evolve, it's on Curiosity Stream. And the host is our next guest. Is it okay with you if I introduce him, Will?
Oh, yes, please do.
Okay, fantastic. I'm going to ask for your permission for everything today. Is it okay if I have some coffee?
Yes, I'm going to give you a blank check. So just anticipate that no matter what you ask for, I'm going to sign off on it.
That's great. Been waiting my whole life, so I'm going to say that. Okay, so yes, my second guest is a biologist, a documentary filmmaker. He's author of 30 Animals That Made Us Smarter and the host of the miniseries we're discussing today, Curiosity Stream's Evolve. Welcome to the show, Patrick A.
Hey, how's it going? Thank you so much, Ethan and Will, for having me. Pleasure to join you on the show today.
Oh my God, I'm delighted to have you. I'm sure I speak for Will when I say that.
I take full credit for you being here, Patrick.
Oh, really? What's the story? You got to give me the rundown.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm a guest just like you. It's like you went to the dinner party and you just started thanking other guests for you being invited.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
I don't want credit for anything. Then I can get blamed later. So I'll happily sit in the back here. So Patrick, listen, I watched, as I think Will did, episode one of Evolve.
Great.
I watched it yesterday. I just absolutely loved it. You know, I wanted to mention in specific the way that some nature programs will use CGI can be a little bit unnecessary or simply lame, to be honest with you. And I thought your show was so fun, so engaging. And then boom, the frosting on top is like a little sprinkle of CGI to help highlight a point.
Yeah.
It was truly awesome. I can't wait to watch the rest of it. So I just want to say congratulations on the show. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to see it finally out. We put in a lot of hard work into making the show. We were filming during COVID. So you can imagine the amount of protocols, the amount of extra time, testing. You're trying to safeguard the crew, safeguard contributors, while still trying to be in the wild and make a wildlife documentary film, plus make a science documentary film, because it's kind of two shows in one, really. Actually,
yeah.
It's a wildlife show, it's a science show, and it's like a travel adventure show. So you should see these bags under my eyes, bro, like for real.
Patrick, you went to several different countries, and at first, I believe in Namibia, you were showing us about the giraffes, an animal that I've always loved, and I did not know what you were telling us in this episode about their blood pressure and about their huge heart. So can you tell us a little bit about what makes the giraffe so damn weird? And if possible, sprinkle in a little bit of your famous American accent.
So we managed to get to Namibia to film these giraffes, and you asked what makes giraffes so dang weird, and it's the fact that they are Should I give it a go? It's the fact that they are the tallest animal on the planet, and they kind of look like something out of Jurassic Park.
Wow.
I don't know how good that is. Probably destroyed your accent.
No, perfect. That was so good.
Now, Patrick, do you agree with that?
Yeah, they are super strange and kind of odd because their whole body plan and shape has been stretched out. And the reason that they are so tall is because it means that they don't have to compete with other herbivores for food. So they typically feed on like acacia trees, which have these thorns, but they've adapted like really leathery tongues that can get around those thorns and get the leaves off. But very few, I think no other mammal can compete with a giraffe. So in terms of its food source, it's secured that because it's got this super, super long neck, right? Which is about 6 feet tall. And they do genuinely, like, to me, there are a couple of animals out there that look like they do belong in a Jurassic Park movie. You've got, I think, the okapi, even rhinos to a certain extent look like they're from a prehistoric age, alligators and crocodiles, and giraffes, for me, are certainly one of them. And they are just, they are incredible. So like when you see them on the horizon, you're like, whoa, a giraffe. And then someone pointed out they're like, oh, look, a baby giraffe. And I looked around. I was like, no, that looks like an adult. It's huge.
Still a huge giraffe.
For real.
Do you think that they evolved to get that height? Like, did they start out somewhat, you know, horse-esque and then just slowly get taller and taller? Or did they just spawn from the dirt tall as hell?
So, okay. I'm going to have to attempt to engage my university molecular and cellular biology brain. But that is
accessing that, information now.
This is the furthest part of his brain from his American accent part of his brain.
Yeah, his cables are all switched up. Literally. We really got this guy on his toes.
I literally, like, that. When did I leave uni? That was in 2007. So that's, 10, 13, 14 years ago. Coming up 15.
Yeah, math also not your strong suit.
You're asking about how the giraffe evolved to have such a long neck. According to Charles Darwin, if an animal evolves a certain trait that is beneficial to that species, as long as it doesn't give them a disadvantage, then that trait is likely to be conserved through the generations. Basically, if your parents have a really advantageous a gene or quality trait, then it's going to be passed on to the children and to the next generation.
Quick question. So there's foliage everywhere. So are you saying that giraffes, long necks, 100% sexual selection? That's what you're saying. I think that's my theory, is that the long necks, it's 100% giraffe magazines propagating an image. The other giraffes buy into it.
Whoa.
That's, I don't know. That's where I'm going with this.
Big giraffe media.
Yeah, giraffe media.
I'm going to get onto that. I think it's a combination of natural selection and sexual selection, which I believe are slightly different. With those long necks, there's, you know, like you said, there's vegetation everywhere, but there's a point where no other animal can reach the vegetation at the top. So there's the down here in the kind of mid-range, they're competing with other animals on the savannah. But any of those giraffes, kind of over thousands and millions of years, that potentially had a slightly longer neck and a slightly longer neck and a slightly longer neck, were able to feed without having competition from other animals. So those genes, those animals would be more successful. So it's more likely that their offspring would have the genes or the combination of different genes that you need to have a longer neck. Now, back onto sexual selection, the giraffes do use their necks for something super weird, super crazy, that scientists and biologists call necking, right? So they use their necks to actually fight. Like, imagine Mike Tyson, like stepping into the ring and like all of a sudden growing this huge long neck and just boom, 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 boom. It's literally like that. It's so ridiculous.
Now, it's in the video, and it's crazy because they don't just start with a jab. They literally start with this wind-up, why-I-oughta, and then they hit each other.
It's a giraffe neck haymaker.
It's really fun to watch, but kind of terrifying.
Yeah, for real. Like, there are, if for any of your viewers that are listening and watching this, literally just type in giraffe necking into YouTube and you'll see what we're talking about. They use their horns, which are technically not, they are horns or horn-like structures called ossicones they swing their necks and then their head, which is about 30 kilograms, which is like the weight of a small child, boom, goes straight into the neck of the other male. And the one that gets knocked out has to scarper, and the one that wins gets all the ladies.
Damn.
Pretty cool.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, well, listen, I could easily talk to you for the full hour about giraffes getting ladies. No problem. But I really was fascinated by this frog, North American wood frog, I believe it was called,
that's right,
kills itself, essentially, and then wakes back up. So can you tell me a little bit about this frozen frog guy?
For sure. I'll tell you about the frozen frog. I just want to maybe, if it's okay, just spend 2 minutes to wrap up on that giraffe thought, if that's
absolutely
okay.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not, Patrick. I'm dictating what's happening here. Stop taking control of my show.
Sorry.
No, please tell me about the giraffe.
Because we got so excited talking about the giraffes, but this show is about biomimicry. So we are, which is essentially the study of looking to Mother Nature. Life's been around for about 3.8 billion years and has had to come up with all sorts of solutions to a whole host of problems. So for 3.8 billion years, nature's been basically we've got this, what I like to call this, these ancient blueprints, Mother Nature's blueprints, which, you know, in all essence, it's like a free research and development lab. And humanity has been on this planet in our most technologically advanced age, even, for such a slither of the Earth's existence. So it makes sense to look towards nature to see what solutions they can come up with. And in the case of the giraffes, they're able to regulate their blood flow really well to avoid things like their blood draining from their head and pooling in their legs, right? Super tight skin around their legs, super tight skin around their neck, special valves in their veins and arteries to maintain that blood pressure. Also to help when they put their heads down, what happens to their head? Like, surely all that blood wants to rush down and kind of something out of Men in Black, you know? And just see this head like explode. But again, the way that their body plan and anatomy and physiology has evolved over time, they're able to regulate that blood flow so that doesn't happen. Same thing is the same kind of principle is trying to be used by a company called I can't remember the name of the company, but they've developed this thing called a giraffe suit. And essentially it is, you know, similar to a typical G-suit, which compresses parts of your body to encourage blood to stay in your head. If you lose blood as you're pulling G's on a fighter jet, you know, going really fast, we've seen Top Gun and all those amazing fighter jet movies. And when they make certain turns and make certain maneuvers, they're increasing the level of G on their body, which forces fluid, blood, to drain out of their head, sometimes upwards as well, which isn't good, depending if you're experiencing negative G. And so with these giraffe suits, looking towards the giraffes and how they manage their blood flow, you're now able to compress the human body and encourage blood to stay in the brain so you can stay conscious whilst you're flying this really fast jet. And I had the fortune of being able to experience that for myself, which was definitely one of, like, you know, experience of a lifetime. I've always wanted to be in a jet and feel what that G feels like. And at the end, I got to say, I remember the pilot got out and he was talking to the sound guy, but I could overhear him. He was like, you know what? I was trying to make him pass out, but I had to stop because I was passing out. I was like, Chip, hey, I can hear you. So he was really trying to put me through through the ringer. But we had a great experience. I managed 4 Gs without the suit. And then with the suit, I gained that extra 1 G. So we managed to get up to 5. And I couldn't even lift my hands at one point. So, you know, a really amazing experience and a great example of how we're learning from Mother Nature.
Yeah, the craziest part about that sequence to me was that you seemed to be having a great time. And I would be so scared. I would be flipping out that you said, like, you literally were saying, like, oh yeah, I grayed out there a little bit. What happened there? How were you not panicking? I don't even know what that means to gray out. You lost color? You lost your vision, color vision?
Well, that's the confidence of the giraffe suit.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's because, you know, if I was wearing a giraffe suit, I would just have the confidence of a giraffe.
But he wasn't even in the suit. He was just up there purposefully unplugging his suit and trying to pass out.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. I'm not gonna make excuses for him anymore. This guy's crazy. He's a wild card.
That's what I'm saying. Thank you.
So let me put it this way: like, I describe myself as, like, a thrill seeker at heart. And I've always sought out new experiences. I came from a background and family life where we didn't have many of those opportunities. So once the door opens, I want to do it for myself. I want to do it for my family to tell them about those experiences, share those experiences with them. But also, I'm kind of like the person in the hot seat that's living it vicariously for all the viewers. So I just love those experiences. I also learned how to skydive recently. So, like, for me, I just want to get myself, like, well into it. And I've always loved Top Gun. I actually wanted to be a fighter pilot and then an astronaut when I was a kid. So I've always been interested in I've seen so many documentaries of people in these high intensity G situations. And so I've actually practiced at home what you're meant to do. So you can actually do this yourself. If you just sit at your seat and if you tense your legs, like tense those legs and you're kind of creating like a bit of pressure in your torso, which then is forcing the blood out of your legs. Ethan's just like literally.
Just imagining people doing this just to like feel something, just to feel right? Some thrill.
Oh, all of the listeners are already neck fighting right now. They're all listening while neck fighting each other. So this is like a step in the direction of pacifism for them to just almost pass out.
Okay, cool. This is how they relax.
But yeah, it was quite the experience. And, you know, whether it's doing that, whether it's at one point I was sat on the back of a bull shark, or whether it's having a cheetah coming up to me and licking my hand, like holding a Perenghi's adder, which is one of the most venomous snakes in the world. And I love those experiences. You know, when would you ever get to do that in your lifetime? And I can come on a show like this and tell you guys about it.
Listen, hopefully for me, never. Very scared of all of that stuff. But I thank you for your service because it is really entertaining and informative to watch you do it. I'll watch you do it all the time. That sounds great. I don't even want to go on a roller coaster anymore. I'm done.
I would have gotten nervous talking to the lady about seals. I would have been like, does she like me?
Ida was awesome, you know. That was great. So I know you want to talk about the wood frog, Ethan, but yeah. I've got to say, like, one of the things that I was really pleased with this show was that we were able to have a bit more of a mix than you typically see when it comes to representation on screen, both with race and with age and with gender.
Yes.
In the case with the seals, with the Cape Fur seals that we were filming in Namibia, I got to spend some time with Ida, who is a marine biologist, a Namibian marine biologist, and maybe one of the first that's actually been on screen. So I literally just went onto her Instagram profile 2 days ago, and she is so gassed up. She is like literally buzzing. Like all the scientists that she knows in Namibia are like, oh my God, we've got a Namibian scientist on screen. And so, you know, I love getting to meet people like that, you know, like people who are excited, who have energy, who work in the field of science, but also like a bit of an adventure to show to people at home and like aspiring kids, like science is freaking cool. And you get to have all these amazing adventures and just to be able to inspire people, man, that's super dope.
Yeah, I was definitely inspired. I thought Ida ruled. And the just seeing, I think it was like 150,000 Cape fur seals on that that beach you were on was so stunning and unbelievable. And then that woman you spoke with about the fungi, about the hyphae, I believe it was called, or am I saying that right?
Yeah, for sure.
That was wild to me.
We're doing everything we can to avoid the woodland frogs, but we're gonna get there. But in regards to the fungi,
huge teaser.
I watched that fungi or the whole episode, but the fungi section immediately after watching Don't Look Up, and that fungi section is about how a fungi plant cocktail, like basically blending these fungi and plants into bricks, is our only chance at colonizing Mars. So if you watch that section right after watching a movie about the world exploding, you're literally like walking around nature like, well, I guess it's up to you, fungi. After we destroyed the planet, you're our only hope at a new one.
Yeah, it's true.
So I linked up with a lady called Lynn Boddy. She's a professor of fungal ecology at Cardiff University. And we got along like super well. And it was really interesting to kind of see her, why she's so passionate about fungi. And like on the surface, quite literally, funguses are just like these, what you see as mushrooms, or these stacks coming out of wood, like you see in the episode. But that's literally just the tip of the iceberg. And most of the fungus exists either in the material or in the soil. And so we lift up this log, and I'd never actually done this before. We lifted up this log and she was like, can you see all these white threads? They almost look like marshmallow shoelaces. If you can imagine the Marshmallow Man, his shoelaces were like all over underneath this log.
I imagine him in Crocs, so this metaphor isn't tracking for me.
Yeah, super, super fashionable, trendy Crocs. it's actually thought that one of the biggest and largest organisms on the planet is a fungus, which is in a national park in the state of Oregon. Biggest organism, single organism on the planet, which is literally mind-boggling when you think about it. But that kind of got us onto this conversation and research into like what could, you know, fungus has been around for millions of years. What potential do they have when it comes to biomimicry? And it turns out that because of their structure, they're just super light, super strong. You can, there's a company that is doing some research in Namibia. I think it's a multinational company or initiative that is looking at how we can use fungus, grow fungus, but then you kind of crush it with, I'm trying to remember what they crushed it with some other substrate. You heat it up and compress it. And effectively, they came up with these bricks that were not only porous, so they would allow for air to kind of not freely move, but like a gentle oscillation, a gentle flowing of air through those bricks. But they were actually stronger than existing what we would call breeze block, the kind of gray blocks that they use in construction. So not only have you got a material that's lighter, stronger, is biodegradable, sustainable, like it's like this wonder material. Again, just like kind of wiring our brains to think about what do we actually need in the future to achieve the goals that we want to achieve, whether it's to do with conservation or sustainability, and looking at towards Mother Nature for those answers.
Wow. That's like alien tech. It's like Marvel vibranium you're describing. That's really, really wild.
In the short term, it's so majestic, but 180 years from now, they're going to be making a Dave and Buster's on Mars out of these, and it's going to lose a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it's going to be really sad to get your Starbucks
in your mushroom cup
at Starbucks. What's up with this frog? Everybody's been talking about it.
I had no idea. but this the wood frog is one of the few animals that has the awesome ability to be frozen and literally thaw out and come back to life. Now, for some people, when you first hear this story, you might have two reactions. The first, which is like, wow, amazing. But you could easily ask, well, what's so fascinating about that? It froze, now it's thawed out, and now it's alive. And the question to ask yourself is why we can't do that as humans. And so what happened, like, you know, if you were to put like a strawberry or grape or some berries into the freezer, freeze them and then let them thaw out, you notice they're slightly more mushy than they were when they first went in. And that's because when things freeze, water, which is in those organisms, expands. So ice expands when it, water expands when it freezes and turns into ice. And in that process of expanding, you burst the cells of the organism. So if you do that with humans, we'd literally like, you'd thaw us out and we'd just be like pretty mushy. All your cells would have burst and lysed. And so you just don't exist anymore. You're non-functional. But the wood frog has a particular set of compounds and molecules in its blood. I guess you could call it an antifreeze that protects the cell from the cells in its body from bursting. So literally it slowly freezes. And then as it thaws out, but its cells are protecting. You like my free frozen?
I love that. Wow. Sub-Zero on the program. Yeah.
And so when it warms up again, these frogs thaw out, and because each of their cells have been protected by these essentially this internal antifreeze, it comes back to life. And so the thought process is that can we, you know, looking at this organism, it's not a single cell organism, it's a multicellular complex organism. What can we learn from those wood frogs when it comes to developing cryogenics? Now, like, I love the whole concept of cryogenics. I'm a massive fan of Demolition Man, if you guys remember that, with Wesley Snipes.
Oh yeah.
And Sylvester Stallone.
Love that movie.
There are so many different iterations of cryogenic freezing in different sci-fi movies, but in reality it's like it's a technology that's at its like fledgling stages, if that. But potentially the wood frog, we've got this animal, so maybe if we looked at what those compounds, molecules are, maybe we could find something analogous, similar to that, which we could actually inject into our bodies, like, and use for long distance space travel. You could actually put all that antifreeze, synthesize an antifreeze that was suitable for the human body. We'd have to figure out like what happens to the actual mind. Would you like mentally, would you still be there? Like even if your body was potentially.
Right.
So you'd enter into this machine and you'd have yourself all plugged up with all the right kind of bits of gear. And then you'd slowly have your heart rate drop. You'd cool down. And then this antifreeze would run through your body. And then you'd slowly freeze. And then whether, you know, that journey across space, we're not talking about from Earth to Mars. We're talking about from our solar system to another solar system, which I believe in our fastest rocket would take about 10,000 years or something like that. Maybe longer.
Yeah, easy.
So, you know, you'd be frozen for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And it sounds super far-fetched, but again, the planet is this amazing research and development laboratory, which we can look towards. And there is proof, there's evidence of quite a big, complex animal that can be frozen and come back to life when it thaws out. So, you never know. Like, an amazing creature.
And you to me, you seem like the kind of guy that would be down to do this. My brain is already pretty much mush. So I think if I was thawed out, I wouldn't stand a chance at being me anymore. But I do estimate that if they said, no, this does really work, we have proof, we've done it on humans, would you want to be frozen for like 1,000 years and then thaw out and see where we're at? All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The break is over. Here we go back to the show about science.
You know what? That would be a very interesting, but also a kind of scary prospect. Imagine a human.
But you love scary. You're up there high-fiving when you're passing out.
I like a thrill. Scary, like, I'm not a fan of scary movies. Thrills. Yeah, little thrills, cool, and then back to normality, you know. But let's think about that. Let's explore that.
Well, I have kids, so I'm not going to go get frozen for 10,000 years. That'd be pretty irresponsible. Like, I have a 2-year-old and a 4-month-old. I can't really... Oh, yeah, I'll just, you know, they get frozen too? I mean, you know what? Actually, that's interesting.
They don't get frozen, but you get to meet your, you know, great-great-great-great-grandkids, maybe. That's kind of cool.
Who hate me for abandoning their... That's the only thing that they pass on from... You know, if we all get frozen and I can just dump my kids on a robot babysitter, I'm with it. But if I just get to find out that my ancestors hate me for getting frozen to... Yeah, I'm not doing that.
The government, the science, the community will provide you a robot babysitter, and your family will be told that you had no choice. We kidnapped you and threw you into this frozen vat. So everything's cool.
Yeah, but even just that 10 minutes where you wake up next to Walt Disney, I'm not with that either. So I think I'm going to pass on being frozen.
Yeah. Patrick, what do you think?
It's a tricky one. I mean... let's do this two ways. Let's look at it one way and then maybe the other. Imagine a human being who, or a collective of human beings who are frozen in the year 1022. And they suddenly find themselves here in 2022. I think they'd have a really hard time. And I'm going to get like a bit deep here, but like kind of conceptually and experientially, and maybe even they're like on a consciousness level, like you're looking around, everything is different. There are these huge metal birds flying above, and people are on these devices and looking at each other, like what's happened, like, to the world, you know? That so I think that,
yeah,
if you look at it from that perspective, it'd be pretty scary for someone coming from 1,000 years ago, just landing, poof, they're here. On the flip side, if we were to freeze ourselves now, wake up in 3022, I think we kind of have a... I'd like to think that we're kind of semi-prepared for that, because we're starting to talk about quite a lot of technologically advanced things nowadays. And but I think it would still be... It would be quite intense, for sure. I know, it'd be cool though, wouldn't it? It'd be like something out of Futurama. It'd be like Fry.
Yeah. That's right. It'd be super
cool. Many,
and I have a feeling just from...
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, how many other people are going to be frozen with you too? Because then you also have to weigh the fact of like, are you the token frozen guy from the past who everybody wants to talk to about frozen stuff? But then there's celebrity that comes with that too. It's like how Tom Hanks is the only person you want to hear talk about World War II. You're that for the 90s.
Right, yeah. I don't know. That's tough. That's also tough. I think just from the conversation, though, it seems to me like you might have to decide for a few days, do some research, Patrick, about being frozen for 1,000 years. But if I told you you were being frozen for like 30 years, you would just be like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. Let's go.
Yeah, 30 years, that might be a bit weird. I'd probably just go full 1,000. Yeah.
Skip to 1,000.
30 years Why gets bother? A bit weird. It gets a bit weird, you know. And But I reckon like 1,000 years. If I could go with like 100 people, if I could handpick 100 people from planet Earth, like right now, I'd probably.
I'm allowing that. That's fine.
Okay, I'm in.
Awesome. Okay, listen, we're running out of time. You both are heroes for doing this show. I thank you so much. Will, if there's something you want to tell people about, now's the time, where people can find you. Obviously, you got your podcasts, but yeah, the floor is yours, my friend.
The Potterhood podcast is a great Harry Potter podcast.
What do you think about the Heat chances? How are we looking right now? I'm from Miami.
Well, I'm from Maryland, and I'm a big Kevin Durant fan. He's from Maryland too, so I'm rooting for the Nets. But I mean, the Heat are a great team. They have all of the like fight of a particularly long neck giraffe. Like, they're bullies. They want to beat up on anyone smaller than them. And you really got to stand toe to toe with them to have a chance of beating them. How'd I do, Patrick? Great. Would you agree with that?
100%.
Assessment of long neck giraffes?
100%.
Okay.
100%.
Because it might go the other way, where the long neck ones are like, look, I got nothing to prove. You know, I got the long neck. Don't mess with me.
Bother.
I won't mess with you. But I don't, the animal world isn't really like that. The biggest ones always kind of have this bully. That's the other thing about giraffes. If you have like an idealized notion of giraffes, maybe skip that part, because it's a dog-eat-dog world for giraffes out there.
Oh, yeah, they're brutal.
No, they'll be fine. Before they even notice, they're on to fighter jets. So it's like the show's going to capture either way. And the show, again, is Evolve. It's on Curiosity Stream. It's a fantastic show that our lovely neighborhood biologist here, Patrick, has hosted and put together. But Patrick, if there's anything else you want to tell people about, or a message you want to send out, please do.
I mean, you know, like you said, if you want to find out more about what I'm doing, you can catch me on Instagram. It's Patrick Arye. I'm going to be making a whole load of YouTube videos. I'm moving into YouTube content creation as of this year, which is going to be really exciting. You can follow my channel, which is called Patrick Goes Wild. I'm hoping to do a few collaborations on there. I have a book also on biomimicry, which is called 30 Animals That Made Us Smarter, and which actually comes out in the States, I think, in the next month or so, which is great, because it's been released here in the UK, but we do have a US publisher who is really excited to share that. So we're really excited to be able to share that book with our US audience and friends. And then, of course, we have the show Evolve, which is on Curiosity Stream. All six episodes are out now. Like, literally, there's something for everyone. We've got cheetahs, stories about squid ring teeth, synthesizing squid protein in vats using bacteria, Namib beetles that collect water out of thin air on their backs, which is going to help revolutionize or help us in 2050, when 2/3 of the world's population potentially will be suffering from water scarcity. The fins of whales helping our wind turbines to become 30% more efficient just by adding the bumps that you see on similar bumps that you see on humpback whales. Literally, we've got so many amazing stories. I think there's something in there for both kids and adults. I would also say, I would just add this kind of final thought, which is, for me, when we think about the whole conversation around sustainability, personally, I think that we live in a world where, like it or not, money rules. So we have to find new and innovative ways of demonstrating the value. You know, we might not like it, but I think we need to demonstrate the value of maintaining some of these wild spaces and preserving many of these species that could potentially become extinct, and showing that there is a business case for that. So in the case of the squid ring teeth, that's a whole business, which hopefully is going to flourish. It's going to help us have like stronger, more biodegradable glues, and also biodegradable and more easily producible squid ring teeth protein threads. So now we're going to have clothes made out of the protein from squid. Even with sharks have these dermal denticles on their bodies. That's what their skin's made out of, and it's really hard for bacteria to stick to them. This company called Sharklet has replicated that, and you can now coat your hospitals or healthcare centers in this material, which would then prevent bacteria from permanently sticking on it and also prevent them from replicating. So we can now, you know, we're living in a kind of post-COVID world, right? And in a world where a pandemic can take us out at any point. Having that type of technology where every surface is kind of antibacterial, I think is amazing. So showing that business case, I think, is really important. And that's what this show does. It shows the true value of nature.
Wow. Yeah. I second that. I mean, what an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. Please come back anytime. I can't wait to watch the rest of Evolve. We can talk about every episode if you'd like. Will, obviously, you are not invited anymore. I thought you were rude. But
poor Will.
No.
Don't worry, I love you, Will.
No, I love you too, Will.
Thank you, Patrick.
I love you too. I thank you for taking the time for doing the show, and I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Nice one. Thanks. Take care.